Traveling the Vortex.
We've joined Liz Shaw and units as they protect the world in episode 303. I'm Keith.
I'm Sean.
I'm Glenn.
How are you guys?
Very good, but not feeling well.
Oh.
Mason's been sick this week, and I think I'm picking up his crud.
It's almost contradictory.
Well, I'm fine in the sense of mood, but I'm starting to feel ill, is what I mean.
Stay back.
Yeah.
Probably spirit is willing, brought it over but the here. Flesh is weak.
Did you guys have a good week?
Yeah, not bad. I didn't do anything except for see Doctor Strange. It was good.
It was really good.
My quick review of it is it didn't feel like a typical Marvel movie, but it fits right in the mold of the universe. So
yeah,
it's quite enjoyable and lots of fun and one of the better films, I think.
I agree with all that. I think my only complaint, and I don't know that that's the right word for it, is that I think they may have relied just a little too much on the visuals to supply the gee whiz factor, which, I mean, the visuals were amazing. I saw it in 3D, and this
and
is one
it's really good on IMAX, too.
I bet it's really good. I was kind of envious that you were going.
I don't know if you guys, if it was in the normal theaters, if it still went to the IMAX ratio a lot of the time, or if it stayed.
It stayed.
Because it went back and forth for IMAX.
I'm sure the IMAX scenes were probably shot in IMAX. That's the reason they did that. But I just, I know a lot of people are kind of complaining that they feel like there's this kind of the Marvel formula when it comes to these origin stories, and I kind of saw it a little bit in this one. They didn't push the boundaries storytelling wise. I agree that it opens up the Marvel universe. We get a sense of the multiverse, all that kind of, you know. And I was really curious how magic was going to really play into it. And I think they did a very good job of kind of explaining all that and opening that door to go, oh, okay, that's where this is all going to fit in. But at the same time, it's just kind of like, it's an origin story.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a good origin story, and Benedict Cumberbatch is amazing. He's a lot of fun, and I can't wait for more of him. But
yeah, I kind of hope they now fast track a sequel, because I want to see more of that universe in general. Of because I was then afterwards very intrigued by the back's history of the organization that he joins. You know, mm-hmm. It's one of those where I'm like, oh, I'd like to learn more about that.
I think what it did well is Doctor Strange was basically fashioned from the psychedelic visuals of the 1960s. That's kind of how the comic book was fashioned. And I think what they did is they did a nice modernization of that psychedelic feel. And I think that translated the best in the movie as well.
Yeah.
And the cape blows the doors off the one in Spawn.
Yeah. This one has personality.
Yeah,
a lot more personality.
Not since Aladdin have I seen a piece of fabric with personality like that. Did you watch anything else, Sean?
We watched a lot of Next Gen. We got through. We're in season 4 now, so got through Best of Both Worlds. And Mel was very angry that I made her wait a whole day to get to part 2 of that cliffhanger. I don't think I could have dragged it out any longer than that. I really tried. I was tempted to make her wait all summer. You know, it's like, no, you've got a 4-month wait like I did. And she says, why? And I was like, because I had to wait 4 months. And when you read The Dark Tower, you got to read all 7 of the books at one sum, you know. And I had to wait years in between them. It's just not fair. But I relented and we watched it the next day. So she's really enjoying it. Other than that, we didn't really, movie-wise, we didn't watch anything.
We watched the new Ghostbusters.
What did you think?
I didn't hate it. but it wasn't. It didn't deserve as much hate as it got, either.
That's true.
It, as far as the humor went, that's, I guess it's kind of what I expected for being a modern comedy. It's going to be the modern humor. And that's just kind of, it's not my humor, but some parts were pretty funny. It is the best once they actually start busting ghosts. I don't see why there was so much hate about it. It was fun. Was it as good as the original? No. But what remake or sequel really ever is?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those things. Sarah really liked it, too. So,
like Holtzman.
Yeah. and I didn't hate Melissa McCarthy in it. So that's something. Because normally I do.
I said I did.
Quite enjoyable, really. It was a fun movie to have on while we waited for trick-or-treaters. I mean, I also watched Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror, the 70s films.
Ah, making the rounds, huh?
Yep. You next?
Went to him first, huh?
He asked for it.
I didn't have time for it, so.
I should have brought with me.
I watched it after Halloween. I just decided to extend it. Why not?
And?
I liked Vault of Horror better than Tales from the Crypt. I watched Vault of Horror first, actually. I knew they weren't really...
But the ones...
You don't have to watch them.
They're not connected. The Crypt Keeper is not even in the sequel. So it's... And it's not just because Tom Baker's in Vault of Horror. I think I just like the story better. The stories in it better. Like the little vignettes I like better.
I found out something interesting, just as a side note. The Frighteners, the Peter Jackson film.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently that was supposed to be a Tales from the Crypt movie.
Really?
And Robert Zemeckis liked the script so much, he decided it should just be a standalone thing on it without... I'm assuming that it would have been the third following Demon Knight and Bordello of Blood, and that maybe the underperforming Bordello of Blood maybe just decided that we don't want to taint this one with what has now become a poison brand. I thought that was really interesting.
Although, I don't think The Frighteners did very well anyway.
No, so. It didn't, which is unfortunate because it's a great movie. But
I misremembered that, though, because I thought Frighteners came out before Bordello of Blood.
Did it?
I thought it did, but maybe I'm misremembering.
I could be wrong. Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe they decided to go with Bordello of Blood instead of The Frighteners. And I've never actually seen Bordello of Blood. I love Demon Knight, but I just thought that was interesting because I realized after hearing that it's like they do share a lot of the same kind of tonal laughs and scares. Yeah. So, sorry, side note. But
do you remember what year Frighteners came out?
Doesn't matter.
90 something.
And then
before Lord of the Rings.
The only other thing I watched was the new Ninja Turtles movie, the sequel.
I still haven't seen that yet.
It was okay. It's more of a live-action adaptation of the cartoon series than the first one was. Mm. In fact, the end credits have a remix of the cartoon series theme song. So that's how far they went to make it connected to that more than anything else. And for that aspect...
That actually kind of makes me want to watch it now.
For that aspect of it, it was kind of like, okay, you kind of really rushed through a lot of stuff to get to where you need to be, and I'll let that pass. I thought the CGI wasn't as good this time. They almost looked more cartoonish. And I don't know if that really helped it or not. They refined the design of the turtles a little bit more, which was a little bit nicer, aside from them looking a bit more cartoonish. And then Casey Jones is kind of an issue in it, because they tried to update him and really screwed up his character completely. Yeah. That's my mini review of that, too. So, for watching it for free from the library, it's not a bad way to spend 2 hours. It could be worse. You could watch Transformers. It's still better than those.
I like Ghostbusters better than Transformers.
I'll say me too. That. Yeah. Definitely.
Frighteners was 96, by the way.
All right. News.
We finally got a U.S. release date for The Power of the Daleks on DVD.
For the U.S. You said U.S.
U.S. release date, yeah.
My brain skipped over U.S. when you said it and then recalled that you did say it.
There's a U.S. release date for the U.S.
It's usually how that works. January 24th.
Yay!
Available on DVD exclusively from Barnes & Noble. And it'll include something that...
The UK isn't getting on
DVD until February 6th, which is a color version.
And then both versions are going to be on there, black and white and color?
Yes, okay. On the DVD. It looks like we aren't going to be getting a Blu-ray version like the UK is, but we're at least getting a DVD version with both and all previous other bonus features. The UK is getting the color version as a download on Christmas Eve, or New Year's Eve.
I think I read somewhere, too, that the color version will be available digitally for the U.S. from BBC America's store at the end of this month.
Oh.
I think I read that when I was looking to see if there was any possibility I could download one from the U.K. that released yesterday or today or whatever it was. Nope. Not available to us until later this month.
So. Yeah.
You are outside the area.
Yep.
Which, you know, it was only episode one that
Right, because they're dropping them individually.
Yeah.
So, what do we think?
About
color?
I don't know how I feel about the color version.
Well, I'm fine with it as long as I have both options. Yeah, it's a perfectly fine
I'll be intrigued to see the color version, because it looks good. I guess it never dawned on me that they just didn't animate it black and white the whole time. That they maybe did a color version and then made it black and white. I guess it makes sense to make it truer to how they would have made it at the time. I just had the thought of color of this never crossed my mind. So when the news broke, I was like, what?
It's one of those, I know we've kind of touched on before with, you know, I come down in very much in favor of, I want to see some classic Hartnell and Troughton episodes in color. I'm really curious to see what they would look like in color. Now, the film snob in me is like, no, they were released in black and white. They need to be in black and white. That's absolutely
you're
true.
You're getting them in black and white.
But that's so, just it. As long as you're going to give me both versions.
I don't see why anybody can have any problem with a colorized version as long as they're preserving the original format for you.
Right. Yeah. No, that's what I agree. If this had been the days of Ted Turner colorizing things and going, here you go, this is what you're going to get, I'd have been upset.
That being said, I have to wonder if the original wasn't made in black and white, and this is a colorized version. Because it's really easy to colorize animation after the fact. And so part of me wonders if they thought, you know, we might be able to market this better to the U.S. if we had a colorized version, and then they turned around and colorized. Because colorization now with computers is so much quicker and easier. I almost wonder if it was originally done in black and white, and they said, you know what, let's make a colorized print. So
I wonder if it's easier to colorize a black and white animation, or if it's easier to color animate something and then throw a black and white filter on it. And
I'm sure it's easier the other way, but I almost
wonder. It wouldn't look as true,
but
black and white clips look really good.
What happened is it's probably the original print was in color, but part of me speculates that I wonder if they decided, well, you know, this might sell better in the U.S. if we did a colorized print. So, and the only reason I say that is because when I saw the BBC's rundown of when it was available where, they kept saying a colorized version. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean they've colorized black and white, but I would have thought it would have said and a color version instead of a colorized version. So
that's true. The DoctorWho.tv website that I'm on calls it a color version.
The BBC store had a link that I sent me to that I think was BBC America's, maybe. I thought it said color.
More importantly, do all these websites spell color wrong?
Yes. With a U.
With a U.
Doctor Who TV spelled it with a U?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because it's the UK one.
Well, then it's spelled right. Yeah. They actually had the language first. So.
I know. I just like to give them grief. It's a color version.
Color version. I wonder if the color would actually help some of the animations we didn't like Reign of Terror, if we would like that better if it were a color animation.
I liked Reign of Terror. I thought the animation was fine. It wasn't as good as Cosgrove Hall, but I liked the simplicity.
I couldn't get past that.
Reign of Terror wasn't simplistic. That was the one that was very...
It wasn't as good as Cosgrove Hall, although that was very simplistic.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. Cosgrove Hall was simplistic.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't get past the Uncanny Valley aspect of it. The Doctor looked a lot like Yoda. It had all these wrinkles, and they all moved, and it was a little overkill. Maybe it would have been different if I'd seen it first, since I really, really liked the Cosgrove Hall stuff they did for the invasion.
I think the colorization wouldn't have helped then if you felt too Uncanny Valley, because then it would have been even more Uncanny Valley. We would have dipped into that valley even further.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I just didn't like it.
Yeah.
Who knows? I'm just glad
we're getting the DVD version, too.
Yeah.
I was afraid the U.S. might not get one, so...
Yeah, that's what I was most concerned
about. But then we're also getting a steelbook over in U.K.
But it won't match your shelf.
I know, but it's so pretty. Did you see the steelbook?
Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's so pretty!
It's still Blu-ray, though.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be more apt to...
A DVD and a
Blu-ray. I was going to say, I'd be more apt to buy the steelbook now from the U.K., since we're just getting a DVD copy of it. If we were getting a Blu-ray and there was a steelbook over there, I might have gone, well, then I have two Blu-ray copies, even though one's region two and one's region one. But
I wonder if it's a DVD Blu-ray combo, though.
Could be.
But then it won't match the rest of the shelf. So
well, it wouldn't have to.
Either way,
as long as I bought the DVD.
The one.
Well played, BBC. You're going to get all the money from me on this one, because I got to buy it digitally, and then I got to buy the DVD to match the rest of the shelf, and then I'm going to buy the Steelbook, because it's cool and so pretty.
Yeah. I'm glad I don't have that weakness for Steelbooks.
I got American Graffiti from Zavi. It's got the original poster art on it. It's pretty.
In other news, Candy Jar Books has announced the latest Lethbridge Stewart novel coming in November this month. The Blood of Atlantis by Simon A. Forward.
Ooh.
That's exciting.
Is there a synopsis for it yet or not?
I'm trying to scroll down to see it. Ah, here's a synopsis. Could Atlantis really have arisen from the Aegean Sea? Lethbridge Stewart's nephew, Owen Vine, and a group of eco-protester friends are attempting to oppose an operation undertaken by Rolf Voerster, a ruthless South African mining magnate, with his own private army, and who is out to harvest as much Atlantean riches as he can. Lethbridge Stewart, along with Ann Travers, is called to investigate a missing Russian submarine that appears to be connected to Atlantis. Recruiting the colorful, eccentric archaeologist Sonia Montilla along the way. All the while, Captain I don't know how to pronounce that last name, and an undercover Sepnats team are investigating the fate of their government's missing submarine, a complication that could light a major fuse on the Cold War. Out there somewhere, Atlantis is growing, and its reach is utterly inimical to human life. I don't think I pronounced that last word right either. Lots of hard words in that, Andy.
Sounds a bit like Indiana Jones and the Abyss doing a possible prequel to Underwater Menace.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm down.
Yeah, sounds good.
You had me at hello. Okay.
Sounds exciting. And difficult to read.
So long as you don't have to say the words aloud, you'll be
that's
good.
That's true. That's true. Those words, I just kind of go across my mind. I know what it means. Oh, I don't know
that dude. That dude.
The Clontarf chat group, and just a couple of words to me this week that I had to look up. What do you guys talk? Oh, that's a word? I thought they were making stuff up. I really did.
So now the next book will have you looking up words, too.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about reading these on a Kindle is you can just tap the word and it says define.
Oh, yeah.
Does it do that?
It won't on these copies we're getting that are PDF, but it's really nice when you do read from a Kindle and it's an actual
The Overdrive copy. App I use does that, too. Boop. Yeah.
It's really nice.
I may have to start using that. I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah.
We should also mention that the Goodreads Book Club Book of the Month for November is Doctor Who in the Blood by Jenny T. Colgan. That's a 10th Doctor Donna book that came out not that long ago.
Cool.
Yeah.
And two of the three of us read Prisoner of the Daleks, uh-huh, last month's offering, and we'll be offering up truncated reviews of that at some point here in the next couple of casts.
Sure.
Not for sure when.
Yeah. Maybe I'll try to knock that out real quick and join you guys.
You have to put Game of Thrones on hold.
Yeah, I haven't even picked that back
up. Oh, really?
I stalled out on that, too.
All right. Well, any feedback this week?
No, but remember, you can send us feedback at feedback@travelinthevortex.com or just go to our website, travelinthevortex.com, and send out the Send Us Feedback tab. We'd love to hear from you.
All right. Let's move on to our review.
The Bluetooth. When Liz Shaw's friend Jean goes missing, the doctor and unit are drawn to the scene to investigate. Soon, Liz discovers a potential alien invasion that will have far-reaching effects on her life, and the doctor is unexpectedly reunited with an old enemy.
It was all right.
I liked it.
I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Once again, I'm coming down on ops course.
But it's a third doctor story, meeting the Cybermen, which... I don't know if they've... I think Big Finish has done other Cybermen Third Doctor stories, or there have been in books, but I think this is my first encounter with a Third Doctor Cybermen adventure.
It's mine as well, I believe.
So that elevates it quite a bit. So
Yeah, it was mine as well.
So for you, it was a, it's a glowing awesome because I get to check my box.
Partially, yes. Oh, and it's something that, you know, the third Doctor started out as my classic Doctor. He may not no longer be that, but there's still a close place in my heart for him. And the Brig and Cybermen, which it's... We talked last week about how some of these Big Finish stories seemed a little ahead of their times as far as new series stories. This had that too a little bit, for me anyways, especially with the Cybermats, because they sounded more like Cybermites from Nightmare in Silver.
I would agree.
I would agree.
And then also kind of the Death in Heaven idea of them infecting people and turning them into Cybermen.
Yeah. Although, I'm a little more forgiving of this one, of coming up with this kind of idea, because while I thought the idea in the Reaping mimicked that idea a lot, this one was a bit different in the sense that they've made this, I don't want to say, cybernetic metal that becomes the Cybermats and then becomes, you know, and then overtakes the host or the individual. Sounds like a lot of that technology was Earthbound technology that this guy had come up with. So
yeah, that's what I liked just about that. To say. Yeah.
What I really liked about it was a different take on the Cybermen. I liked the like the metallic blue look of the Cybermen. I like how the Cybermen retain the facial features, but it seems like the rest of the body is a little more human or humanoid. And I like that the sound is the same.
Yeah. I like the fact that the ship that crashed is or the group is a post invasion mm-hmm. group that yeah. it was a group that was supposed to rise up and didn't get to.
Right. Pretty much they died. So the Doctor took the cybernetics of the controller or whatever was flying piloting the ship, I suppose.
Yeah. Which was a really cool idea to introduce.
That's cool.
Without trying to do a whole new invasion story.
Right. Well, the cool thing, too, is, yeah, because it has its basis in that story, and...
It gave you the invasion already.
Yeah, and it gives you a different type of Cyberman, which I think is really good, because it doesn't feel like the while it's still the same motivations, it's still the same trappings, it's the visualizations and the surroundings of it are quite unique, which gives the third Doctor a different type of Cyberman than any of the other Doctors have had, so that was kind of neat as well.
And does it surprise anybody that ultimately the villain is a dentist?
Are you saying that they're inherently dentist? Evil?
They're evil. They're not inherently dentist? Evil. They're evil. Across the board.
Somebody doesn't like to go to the dentist.
Nope.
That might explain your teeth.
It does.
At least you admit it.
No, I can pinpoint the day that happened. Actually, when my dentist came at me and stuck his hairy thumb in my mouth, it was kind of like, okay, I'm done with this. This was back before we had gloves and, you know, safety precautions, and he came at me with a...
Oh, so long ago in the Stone Age.
A bedrock tool.
Hammer and a chisel.
Yeah. No, that whole scene was a little tough to listen to, actually, with just something about the Muzak that was going on in the background when she's in the lobby, and she started talking about this smell, and I just had creep chills going up, and just like, okay, hurry up and get out of here.
It's clearly an author, and I can't remember the author's name, doesn't like the dentist either.
Nigel Fairs, because
the imagery really, I mean, in your head, you really kind of, it kind of puts you in that situation.
Yeah. Well, the only thing missing was some drilling sound from the other room and somebody screaming.
Something I like about the Companion Chronicles in general, because I have the advantage of having listened to several now, is the personal recounting of stories, the way that they're structured in such a way that the companion is recounting an adventure with the Doctor. And I think what that also does is it allows the story to pace along differently and sometimes for the better, because mm-hmm. any time that Liz was unconscious or under the influence of the metallic object in her mouth or things like that, it was always recounted up to, and I passed out, or and then I fainted. And then when I, the last thing I remember is this, and then she's informed back. And so us as the listeners are informed back in a truncated way. And I kind of like that, because while it can take away from the action of the listening of a story, it also moves things along quite nicely.
And this format doesn't lend itself to action very well. Mm-hmm. When you're doing a single person, maybe two person audio, it's much harder to do good action. Like,
we only
that.
Get one other voice in it, which is typical for the Companion Chronicles.
Which, and having the companion relay the story is such a clever way to have it, have your cake and eat it too, really, when you're doing these companion stories.
See, I agree that the format works, and I understand where you're coming from with, you know, the time jumps, being able to truncate that. For me, that was one of the downfalls of the story, because I've always associated Liz as a strong character, and she's a strong companion, and I didn't like the fact that she was continually rendered unconscious and kind of turned into the screaming damsel in distress. That even she says, I screamed much to my own chagrin, or, you know, just, it seemed like there were several of those that were, I don't know, out of place, and then I passed out. And I was like, again? I mean, I felt took away from her character, especially considering the setup, that we start the story with what made me decide to leave.
That's my one complaint.
And we don't really get there. We kind of just... So it's another adventure with the doctor. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a horrific one. And she had a close call. We're kind of left to presume that that's what finally was the straw. Except that, well, we know from later stories that she then continues on with UNIT and goes to the moon. And so it's kind of like, well, maybe you were thinking about going? I don't know. I just feel like it didn't,
play to her. That pre-credit sequence was... Yeah, I had an issue with that.
Which is weird, because that pre-credit sequence really set me up, and I was excited. I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. And that it just we just didn't connect to anything.
It probably suffers from the time that it was released, because I think a lot of the stuff that has been now retroactively related to Liz Shaw, even after Caroline John's death, has been done post this story. And I think that Big Finish was at the disadvantage now that they... There were more adventures with Liz Shaw, and something that I'm kind of regretting that we didn't do is throw in a comic, because there are some comics and prose that features Liz Shaw and further adventures beyond her final episode in the first season. So I think it's a little unfair to ding it because of that, because of the placement where it was, but I think it is fair to... allude to the fact that it doesn't really feel like it gives a justification for her.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And it felt out of character for her to go through some of the things that she did in the manner in which she did.
See, and I disagree with that. And I think it's going to go toward what we talk a little bit more here in our companion archive about Liz Shaw, is I never felt that Liz Shaw was a very strong, strength-wise, character. She's very strong-headed and intelligent and smart, and she makes smart decisions. But I think, with the exception of a few times, she's not a woman of action. She's not a jump in there and do things type companion. She never was.
No.
She was always kind of that assistant to the doctor. Unlike Joe Grant, who did step in and try to do things. So no, I don't feel that this was any different to Liz Shaw's past character, especially in that season of Doctor Who.
I don't know.
I thought her passing out was every time it wasn't like she fainted because of what was going on. I mean, she had the tooth in her.
Sure. I mean,
every time she passed out, it seemed to be because of excess force on her, not, oh, it's just too much for me to handle.
Right. No, I can write it off from the standpoint that she's under the influence of an alien technology. You know, she's got a cyber molar. Okay. I mean, you know, that's, I suppose, as valid a reason as any to pass out. But it just, I disagree with you, Glenn. No, Liz has never been a woman of action. But she's, like you said, she's always made the smart decisions. And, you know, it's not above her to go to the dentist's office on her own and go check it out. That's a Liz thing to do. But I feel it's also a Liz thing to do that she would have been able to get out of that situation. I mean, going back to things like Ambassadors, where she flees the room and is running along a river dam or whatever that water reclamation plant thing is. That, you know, I mean, she's active in those regards, that it's making the decision to get away. And I don't know.
Well, she's not afforded the opportunity to make the decision to get away in this story. So I don't, like, again, I don't think that equates.
I don't know. It just seemed like she was ensnared a little too easily. And then she was passive from that moment on. That she
was only passive because every time that she was put in a situation where she could make a decision, she was overcome by the entity. I mean, it doesn't. Nowhere here does she get the chance to do what she did.
That's my complaint, I guess, is that it fundamentally changes for me who she is, who her character is, because they're putting her in a situation that she's not normally in. And sometimes that works. Sometimes you can put a character into a situation that would be uncomfortable and you know, show some growth from it. And this is only an hour-long audio and, you know, split into four parts. This is Hand of Fear.
This is Sarah Jane being takeover and becoming influenced by influence of the week in anything and not being able to make a decision or make changes either. I don't see
it. But with Sarah Jane, there's a history of that.
Maybe that's the thing, is you're not used to Liz being taken over.
Right. Yeah. No,
because she hasn't in any of her TV stories.
Right. No, I think that's my point.
I'm gonna have to come down on the side of that's a weak argument. That doesn't convince me of anything.
I didn't like it. I think my main complaint was the non-connecting of the dots between the two. The story itself was fine.
That I agree.
I liked the Cybermen aspect. I thought that was pretty cool. I liked the as you said, the new design, kind of giving us something a little different than the standard. That was cool. It was a dentist, you know. that was expected. The brig was the brig, which was, fundamentally down to, we're going to go in and kill everybody at the end of the story.
The brig was Third Doctor era brig. Very much so, especially at the end. Although it did seem a bit contrived and tropish to do that, to go there with the end, because that wasn't something that was always done, but it's something that's on the forefront of our minds, that was the brig. That's the way brig cleaned stuff up. Well, realistically, it wasn't. I mean, he really only did that in Seeds of Death, the Green Death, and he only did that in Silurians, and so they kind of backed off of that, finish with force type mentality with the brig. But because they did that in those stories, we think of that. So that's the brig. You know, that's how I clean stuff up. And to go there with this was another
impactful cleaning up.
Going there with that almost felt like, okay, you're using that cliche that we all kind of lean to go, hey, look, the brig's being the brig,
But yeah.
Unfortunate, I think.
I love that it starts with the brig and the doctor got in a fight over power. And so the doctor was off on a drive. that was in line with the two characters,
agreed.
Well, and even Yates and Minton in it were correct characters, too. Mm-hmm. They did what Yates would have gone back in and figured out what was going on with the dentist and saved Liz from what was going on. And
I like the drop Minton line of the new guy, fresh face, Captain Bates.
Yeah.
Yates.
I think maybe that's what it... Maybe I set myself up for just a different story, because I was really being a companion chronicle narrated by Liz. I think maybe I was just kind of expecting her to be the hero of the story, as opposed to it being more of a, well, of course the doctor's got to come in and save the day. So maybe that's kind of where
could be. And I have the advantage of having listened, because I think there's two stories prior to this, or is there three in that season prior to this? I can't remember where
this is the third.
Okay, so there's two stories and I had already listened to those. One with Vicky, and one with Susan, maybe?
I believe Susan was the first one.
Yeah, Susan, and then I thought Vicky was the second one, but maybe I'm wrong.
Trying to pull it up.
It's not Fraser.
No, I don't think Fraser had any of that first season.
Zoe.
Oh, Zoe, that's right. It was Zoe, yeah. Oh, because there was one from each doctor. Yeah, well, with the exception of the fourth story. But
the fourth story was Romana.
Oh, then it did. And I skipped over that Romana story on purpose. So went on to the second season. So that's why I'm...
The first doctor was Vicky. Vicky and Steven. for the first Doctor.
Yeah, okay, gotcha.
That's where you were getting Vicky from.
Yeah, that's where I was getting Vicky from, yes. Anyway, I had the advantage of having listened to these chronologically up to that point and had the format kind of in mind. So, because I think I had kind of the same arguments for the first story in that series, in that season, as I did the same thing as I thought it was. I think I was a little more critical in my mind with it because of the format of it, not, you know, being used to the way the main line goes and then coming to these Companion Chronicles, which are really more like an audio book.
Yeah. But no, I mean, like I said, I didn't.
I didn't realize it going into it how much the Doctor was in it. But then once he was in it as much as he was, I did not have any issue with how he wound up being the hero of it.
Yeah, no, I mean once he's on the scene and he's on the scene.
I guess I just dropped that expectation once he showed up.
I just wonder if that was maybe coloring my perceptions of
that could be
could be
why Liz is unconscious all the time.
And hitting Benton over the head with a piece of the wall.
And eating encyclopedias.
Encyclopedia Britannicas.
Yes.
Nom, nom, nom.
Should we talk a little bit about Liz and her career with the unit and as a character companion?
Yes. What would you like to talk about?
Liz has never been one of my favorites as far as companions for the Doctor. And nothing against her as a character, but as I alluded to earlier, I've always felt that Liz is kind of the assistant type. She's the scientist. She's, for all intents and purposes, she's the scientific advisor until the Doctor shows up on their doorstep and kind of takes over that role. And she's, at the beginning, kind of relegated to be his assistant, but not I don't think intentionally. I think it's they're intended to work together, but the way that the Doctor treats her, he treats her as an assistant. And I think it comes across that way throughout the rest of her run.
Although it's ironic you kind of say that because, I mean, she was recruited in Spearhead from Space.
That's true.
So she didn't really get to be scientific advisor for very long.
That's true.
It's almost with a little bit of, fan retconning, which we can do now, with the Lethbridge-Stewart series that Canny Jar has provided us, you kind of get the sensation that Anne Travers is the would-be scientific advisor for UNIT, although UNIT doesn't exist. And then at whatever point that she leaves, which we don't know yet, the Brig thinks, well, I need somebody to replace Anne. So he hires Liz, and then the Doctor shows back up, and he's like, oh, well, if I can get him. Sorry, Liz, that's kind of how it pans out for her.
It's like you got recruited just, if you'd got a little sooner, maybe.
Yeah, she might have had more of a foothold in the position and would not have become his assistant as
much.
This
sort of makes me wonder, and we don't know because we don't have a finite time in the Lethbridge-Stewart universe when Anne leaves, if there was somebody in between Anne and Liz, because obviously Liz Shaw doesn't come on board.
Because there is some time between the invasion and Spearhead.
No, go ahead.
No, I'm kind of with you. Liz was one of those companions that I wasn't totally familiar with, honestly, until we really started the podcast. Because on my rewatches and being able to see them, I didn't own a lot of the Liz stories, and KCPT didn't air a lot of them. They always kind of went more toward the end of Pertwee's era, which was the Sarah Jane stuff, and I'd see Joe occasionally. So kind of coming into it, and it took me a while to warm up to her. And what prompted doing this was the realization that, quite inadvertently, we have watched all of Liz Shaw's stories for Friday Night Who this year, including the Five Doctors, which she's in. So we've watched every televised appearance of Liz Shaw. By the time we get through with Inferno, next week, we'll have them all knocked down. I was like, well, let's talk about Liz since we've spent so much time just quite accidentally with her this year. And kind of going back over them and realizing that she is, I think she is a stronger character than maybe what she's kind of given credit for, because she can step into a room and isn't afraid to butt heads with the Doctor over something scientific.
Agreed.
And
I think she's strong-headed, don't get me wrong. I think she's intelligent. The way that you were kind of portraying it was that there was something different. And maybe because Bluetooth puts her a little bit more in that damsel.
It almost puts her more in a traditional companion position.
Yeah, a little bit.
She normally gets on the
her stories are not. I mean, you look at Spearhead, and she's obviously not there much. The intro though, but she's not there much. But what she is bucking the Doctor for I'm not going to fetch you coffee,
and she's fighting Lethbridge Stewart
and fighting Lethbridge Stewart as well. And then we get
Ambassador's next, right?
Yeah, I think Ambassador's is next, right?
Is it Ambassador? No, Silurians.
Oh yeah, you're right.
Silurians.
Silurians is next. Yeah,
and you know, in that one,
I was melding Silurians and Spearhead into one story for me too.
with Silurians, she's almost more of a cheerleader because the Doctor's off doing the scientific stuff, and she's kind of shuttling messages back and forth. But she's like, "Well, don't worry, the Doctor will figure it out," and that kind of stuff. But at no point in time, I mean, she's the voice of reason. At no point in time is she captured and thrown into, you know, have to escape her. And I mean, she doesn't get those moments.
But she does get to do some good science.
She does get to do some good science on her own.
Granted, at the Doctor saying, "Go do that." But he at least lets her to go do that,
right? Because he recognizes the brain under there. And then with Ambassadors, yes, she is captured, but she's pretty much running the project for the bad guys at that point.
I think
and working to try to escape at the same time.
Yeah.
I think Ambassadors is her strongest story the television realm, because I think she finally feels like she's allowed to do something. She's kind of put up front, not less of that scientific, just that scientist in the background, and more of an active role. And I think that's another reason I like Ambassadors, because I think the characters are balanced very well in that story. And so she shines there. But I still don't ever feel that she's any different there than she is in, say, this story, or even the next story, or the stories previous. She's just featured a lot more in that one.
Yeah, and with Inferno, obviously, Liz is, they back off of it a little bit, but I think that's done on purpose because you've got alternate Liz,
and I think that's part of why, maybe that's why going into Bluetooth, where we left Inferno with alternate Liz being the very strong woman of action. Maybe that's why in Bluetooth you had more issue, because you had that Liz in your head.
And that's not Liz. And that's, I think, what we also have to recognize is that I think what Inferno does for not the character, but the actress of Caroline Johns, is it highlights her strengths as an actress, that she can change and she can be a different type of person. She can be a different kind of character. She's not, you know, stereotyped in the role that she is as our Liz. She can also be a very different character. But I think that's a testament to the actress and not necessarily the character of Liz, because it's a completely different universe, a completely different Liz.
Right. Yeah,
absolutely.
But I've never thought of her as...
But in Inferno, she also gets to do some other great stuff, too. I mean,
yeah.
When she is there proper, she's helping to try to get the Doctor back. I mean, when we return in Friday Night Who, she's going to be the one that kind of brings him back to proper Earth. So.
And then she turns into Nursemaid. So,
yeah.
I mean, really, that's what happens, is because once she's back and the Doctor's, you know, down, she's the one nursing him back to health there, too. Yeah. So.
But going back and looking at these stories, I just never felt that Liz was the typical companion. You know, the companion's job is to hand the Doctor test tubes and tell him how brilliant he is, as she apparently told the Brigadier upon her departure from the unit. And I think it's a start of a trend that really started with Zoe. I feel like Zoe was, for me, probably the first of the... Let's really try and do something a little outside the box by making Zoe. In many ways, I think Zoe is almost smarter than the Doctor when it comes to certain things. And she's such a fascinating companion. Now, obviously, she's still a companion because she gets into trouble and occasionally needs rescuing. But for the most part, Zoe was the
Zoe's the intelligence and the Doctor's the wisdom. It's really what I've always looked at that relationship.
Yeah. And I think they may have tried to continue that with Liz and didn't quite get there. But part of that is the format of the show, you know, the fact that we're allocated to mad scientists or alien invasion stories, that she suddenly doesn't necessarily have the opportunity to have the same kind of adventuring that that maybe some of the other ones had, and that may have been why they decided, well, this didn't work, let's back off and give him somebody that he has to explain things to all the time with Joe and go that direction.
Do you guys think she would have liked traveling in the TARDIS? Do you think she would have gone with him if he had asked?
That's a really interesting question.
I don't think she would.
I don't think she'd enjoy it. No, I think...
I think one part of her would have thought, you know, think of the things that I can like see and explore and the scientific explanation.
But the actual adventures itself, I don't think she would have.
I don't think she would have either, because she never really fit in, again, as the woman of action type and the hands-on. And I think she would have been disappointed with herself if she had been put in situations that she would have relied on the doctor to rescue her, and which is what we see happen a lot of times in the doctor's adventures. So I don't think she'd have been as comfortable with the adventuring part.
Yeah,
she would have been fascinated by the scientific aspects of it, but I don't think she would have enjoyed it. Now, would she have gone with him? That's the question. Would she have weighed that against one or the other? Because she doesn't know.
Yeah.
She doesn't know that much. I mean, I don't get the impression that the doctor's recounted a lot of stories. And so...
She'd only have what happened that unit
exactly
to base it off
of. Well, even after Inferno with the TARDIS console dematerializing in front of her, I don't think she ever...
Fully believed.
...really took him seriously that this is what it does.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's true.
And to some extent, the Brigadier is in that vein as well. When, I mean, even faced with, hey, look, part of unit headquarters has been moved to another planet. Oh, I better get on the phone to Geneva.
To another universe.
Oh, Brigadier. So I, you know, that's just, I don't think she would.
She certainly would not have enjoyed it as much.
No.
I think. Yeah. It's hard to tell, though. It's hard to tell with anybody that, especially when you they've never been put in that situation.
It's true.
I think she's sorely missed, especially when the cast comes back and does things now. It's a sad thing that she's another one of those Doctor Who alums that we've lost over the years.
And it is almost a bit of a sad thing that there's only the four stories that we get with her.
Yeah.
Even though they're longer stories, it's still, oh, look, it's only four, so she does get overlooked a lot, too,
right.
Which I don't think she should be.
And, of course, I don't know how much Big Finish she did, audio-wise.
Which I hope she did quite a bit, because I really enjoyed hearing her do the Companion Chronicle.
Because she's only been past maybe less than 5 years, right?
Right. It's been while we've done the podcast.
Yeah.
And 2012, I believe.
Okay. So she's... there's a chance, since Big Finish had been doing a lot up until then, that there are some more.
It looks like there's quite a few novels that were written with her in it.
There are. And there's like I say, there's a few comics as well, which I kind of feel bad that we didn't throw a comic in there as well, since this is going to be so short.
Well, the nice it's just thing like about your time that, on TV.
The nice thing about that, though, is if we decide later to do a Liz Shaw Companion Archive 2,
there's plenty we'll have of stuff to choose
we'll
from.
Have some more stuff available, so.
I think it's interesting, I've been kind of going over some of the reactions to her, and where did this go? Some thought she was a missed opportunity because she had such a short time, and the producers didn't really know what to do with a strong, smart female character, which I think is
it seems to come across,
probably accurate. But then I can also see the other side of the coin, where... While they may have had innate respect for each other between her and the Doctor, that she never really had the companionly affection that the later companions kind
of
showed.
That was one thing I did like about Bluetooth, was the two of the Doctor and her had that affection that I felt was kind of missing from the series.
Yeah.
Seems like Big Finish might have tapped into that and realized that was missing too.
Yeah.
And apparently Pertwee even commented some 20 years after their run together that he and Carolyn never really... They were okay, but they were coworkers, but they never really hit it off the way that
he and Katie May.
Thank you. I couldn't think of her name, or obviously her. He and Sarah Jane,
Elizabeth Sladen.
Elizabeth Sladen. Thank you. Again, my brain.
Or Nicholas Courtney for that matter.
My brain kept wanting to say Liz, and it's like, no, that's the character. So. And, you know, that happens.
Oh, yeah, just, certainly.
You run into those things that's like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly.
But.
I Not much for us to say then about this show.
I think I need to have more read or hear more of her adventures to be able to say more.
I think certainly that's something that illustrates a point, is that there's more Liz out there that we can explore and should explore and formulate. Maybe even we might come back to the table next time and say, you know, I really have a much greater appreciation for Liz Shaw in the series because of A, B, and C. Yeah. So that, I certainly have a better appreciation for her based on Bluetooth.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed. Because of, as you pointed out, the relationship she did have with the doctor there, having a little more to do and being front and center, where she always seemed to be kind of pushed aside, and having more of a companion aspect in the audio than she did really on television. So.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
All right. What do we got coming up on the schedule, Sean?
Well, coming up on the schedule, we will be finishing Inferno with parts 5 through 7 for Friday Night Who this week. So if you're available, please join us. We push play on part 5 at midnight on Saturday morning. And then that'll set us up nicely for episode 304, where we will take a look at the I believe everybody's getting them now in the mail this past week. The Candy Jar Shorts, Havoc Files Volume 2. And the reason that we chose Inferno is not because of Liz Shaw, but because our friend Andy has written a story that I'm assuming is wonderful called Ashes of the Inferno. So we thought, well, let's redo that. So we'll be coming fresh off of that for that. And then, I'm sure most of you are very excited for Power of the Daleks, which, as Glenn alluded to earlier, episode 1 released in the UK this past week. But it should be releasing on BBC America online this coming week, if my sums are correct.
I got the impression it was 2 weeks from now.
I scheduled it 2 weeks from now to give us an extra buffer.
Okay. You probably know better than I do working the schedule, because I thought it was later in November than that, but that may be right. I guess tomorrow's the 7th. Well, yeah, tomorrow's the 7th, so you're thinking this week is
the release? I
thought it was double digits, so that's probably right. We're probably both right.
Good.
Well, there you go.
That happens sometimes. But so we'll be watching. We'll be watching that for Friday Night Who. We're going to break it up and do parts 1 through 3 one week, and then parts 4 through 6 the next. In between, we'll be doing some more a big finish with the 4th Doctor Adventures, season 2, number 4, The Justice of Jaxlar. As well as the Titan Comics 4th Doctor miniseries that I believe is just about to finish up. So we're going to go ahead and tackle that as all one chunk. And then we'll finish Power of the Daleks and then give you our thoughts on that Lost Adventure and what's going on with that.
Something that came to my attention this week, speaking of Power of the Daleks, is we were talking about the Telesnap Reconstruction is going to be available as part of that as well. And it occurred to me that, unlike Underwater Menace, I already have, prior to Underwater Menace, I already have some foreknowledge of what it's going to be like, because I'm assuming they're going to take the official reconstruction that the BBC has already done on an MP3 CD that they released several years ago, which was produced in order to create a visual representation of the story many years ago. And I've actually seen that reconstruction already. So if it is indeed that, it's certainly much better than what they did with Underwater Menace reconstructions. And even I say better than the reconstruction that they did for the one story of Web of Fear.
Really?
So yeah, I think it's a well done piece. And if I remember right, it's been years back now, 2 or 3 since I watched and listened to that. There are some like movement. They did some clever stuff with it to make it a little more visually appealing. So yeah, that will be. I can already say now that that it's not going to be just a piece together. Here it is linearly. It is actually presented pretty well from what I remember. So
I wonder if that's one of the factors that goes into deciding. Because I remember we were disappointed with Underwater Menace that they didn't go ahead and animate, and just gave us the recons for the missing bits. And I wonder if that's because most of Doctor Who fandom, indeed, even, I mean, listening to Annika talk about it at Time Medi, you know, that, well, this is a bit of a dog, isn't it? And I wonder if just the kind of perception is, we're not going to put that much effort into that one because it's
No, I think I think that one came down to the wire because I think they had a very intention of animating it, and then that fell through. I think what we got was a quickly thrown together version so that they could put it out on DVD. I think BBC and To Entertain and BBC Worldwide, I should say, felt pressured to get that DVD out because they had advertised it. They had, you know, promoted it. They had a trailer made for it. And then
nothing.
And then it fell through with the animation. And so
were they for sure going to animate it?
They had a company lined up.
They had everything lined up.
Yeah.
So why not just release a statement that says our animation fell through, we're going to hold on to it until time as we can animate it, instead of not saying anything?
Because I think what happened
was they canceled the DVD on Amazon.
Well, because that's what BBC Worldwide does. We know that from past experiences with them. But I think that they caved to, instead of doing that, which might have been the right thing, they caved to the pressure of fans out there hollering for that DVD. Where is this? We were promised this. And I think they felt like, well, we can give them something. So I think that's what it boiled down to. Who knows? They may go back. Now, if Power is successful, they may go back and animate everything, you know, that's missing. Just say, hey, you know, here we go. We might as well do it. So, in fact, there's a call out there now because I was reading a little something that BBC America had a lot to do with the animation being made for Power of the Daleks.
Oh.
So if that is indeed where the money's coming from, they may be able to, based on the popularity for this particular story, the BBC chips in that, BBC America chips in that money. Again, another funding arm that the BBC doesn't have, with the exception of BBC Worldwide, that would make it possible to animate more stuff. In fact, people are already petitioning for Evil of the Daleks to be animated, and they haven't even seen Power yet. So,
well, there you go, fans. Buy early, buy often, buy it digitally, buy it on DVD, and then buy the Steelbook from the UK.
Yep.
And buy a DVD for your friend.
And we went over the schedule, so did you have anything else on the schedule after I interrupted you?
Well, the only thing after we have Power, the only thing after Power that we have on the schedule thus far is the first week of February, Megalos.
Megalos. Finally. I've been looking forward to this one for 5 years now, almost six.
Why?
I like the story. I really do. I think I want to say it's one of the ones that I recall the most in my head from watching it. But that's probably what it boils down to is, as a kid, I can remember a lot of details to this one. Like, I remember a lot of that era, but there's certain details about Megalos I remember. And I have rewatched it since, and didn't pick it apart, which I have done before, where I've gone, wow, why did I like this when I was a kid?
Okay, fair enough.
I'm excited for it.
I'll freely admit that it's one that I very much am not familiar with. I kind of feel like I'm teasing it a little bit because I know fandom seems like it's kind of meh.
I think it's the middle of the road for a lot of fans, especially in the Baker era.
I think I distinctly remember episode one. I don't know that I ever saw any of the rest of it. So we'll find out come December.
That's right.
And Keith's all like, it's all new to me.
He turns into a plant, I guess.
Cactus.
Cactus man. This is the universal symbol for Cactus Man, by the way. You can throw the spirit fingers at your face.
All right. Well,
wish we were a visual podcast.
That works so much better if you could see it.
Trust me, it's amazing.
Well, if you're not already supporting us on Patreon, please do so. And those who are supporting us, every bit of that money goes right back into this podcast. You can find a link on our website, travelingthevortex.com. Anything else we need to talk about this week before we wrap it up?
Remember to teach me about greed. Send me money.
All right. That's going to do it for this week. Until next week, I'm Glenn.
I'm Sean.
Yeah, I'm Keith.
And don't send me money. Cheers.
Aw. Good night, everybody.
Be seeing you.
You can send me money.
You have been listening to Traveling the Vortex. Doctor Who and all of its associated programs are owned and trademarked by the BBC. No infringement is intended or implied.